Good afternoon. The open session for this Thursday, May 4th, 2023 is in order. Happy May the 4th for all who celebrate. Is there a such motion, Mr. Vice Chair?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move to suspend the rules on the timely submission of agenda documents in order that the Commission may consider the late submission of agenda document number 23-10-B1.
Any discussion on the motion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Motion passes unanimously. Okay, first up is the revised audit procedures. I am very excited to call this agenda item. The revised audit procedures for a committee to not receive public funds has been a product of a lot of hard work and touched on nearly every department of the FEC. This new process will significantly improve the way we conduct these audits, provide better and quicker information to the public, and increase the procedural rights afforded to audited committees. For many years, the audit process for committees that do not receive public funds has been a long, inefficient, and often opaque process. To improve the process, the Commission solicited comments from the public and held a hearing on February 14th, 2023. We have gone above and beyond to solicit comments and input from the public. Indeed, we were not required to solicit public comments or hold a hearing, and the Commission often does not do so when it adopts agency procedures or amends directives, but we did so here. The revised audit procedure documents are the product of months of bipartisan work, negotiations, and agreement to increase fairness, due process, efficiency, transparency, and the effectiveness of these audits. I want to first thank Commissioner Traynor and Ashley Stowe for partnering with my office on this project. Many thanks to my EA, Nick Bamman, for months of hard work shepherding this across the finish line. The four of us made an unlikely team, but we managed to build trust and keep our sense of humor to get this done. I look forward to the next big project we take on together. I also want to particularly thank Commissioner Broussard and Esther Gyroid. Commissioner Broussard makes us consider the hard questions and is a tireless advocate for this agency staff. Commissioner Broussard, these procedures are better because of you. Thank you. This was an all hands on deck project that touched nearly every department of the agency, from audit, RAD, and OGC to information, tech, press, and administrative services. With our great staff, we would not be here today. Bear with me, I'm sorry. I have a lot of people to thank, and I'm very excited to do so. From audit, I want to especially thank Dana Brown and her fantastic management team of Erica Lee, Kendrick Smith, Nicole Burgess, Rebecca Yarborough, Rakita Morcombe, and Susanna Patius. Dana and her team provided us with practical insight into the audit process and quickly turned around edits, input, and questions to keep the ball moving forward. Thank you so much. From policy, I want to thank Nevin Stepanovich, Amy Rothstein, Joanna Wallstriker, Evan Christopher, and the tremendous compliance advice team of Jessica Selenkoff, Danita Alberico, Josh Bloom, Jen Wallman, and Margaret Foreman. From RAD, Debbie Chacona. From Enforcement, Charles Kitcher, Jim Lee, and CJ Pavia. From Admin Law, Christine McLaren and Steve Hajar. To the Secretary's Office, thank you for bearing with us for our endless questions and documents. We are grateful for you. Thank you. Also, thank you to our great department heads, Pat Orock from the Office of Compliance and Lisa Stevenson, our Acting General Counsel. I also want to thank Special Counsel Larry Calvert for his broad knowledge across all departments. Larry, we could not do this without you. Thank you. Finally, I want to thank those members of the public who submitted comments and testified at the public hearing. You provided invaluable feedback to help us improve the revised audit procedure. Now, again, bear with me as I walk through a few of the major elements of these changes. The audit begins with the notification letter to the committee. The big change here will be that the notification letter will detail the reasons the committee was selected for an audit and documents sought by our audit staff. The scope of documents that our audit staff may request have not been curtailed in this new process. This will improve transparency of the process and allow the audited committees to understand why audit seeks particular documents. It will also improve the efficiency of audits by identifying the requested documents at the initial stage of the process. Audit staff will then conduct fieldwork, and at the conclusion of fieldwork, FEC staff will provide the committee with an exit conference report detailing the factual basis of each proposed audit finding and attaching OGC's legal analysis to each proposed finding. Audit staff may also recommend corrective action, which usually takes the form of amending disclosure reports. The committee will have the opportunity to file a response. The biggest change here is that the committee will first be provided with OGC's legal analysis, and therefore will have the information necessary to meaningfully challenge any legal theory raised by OGC. That's a new change. Audit staff and the committee will attempt to informally resolve any factual or legal dispute. If audit staff or OGC agree with any of the committee arguments, or if the committee provides records disproving a proposed audit finding, the issue will be dropped from future reports. If disputes remain, the committee can request an audit hearing. If the commission agrees with any of the committee's factual or legal points, the commission may vote to remove, alter, or reduce a proposed finding, and it will not appear in any further audit report. Given the committee's opportunity to challenge legal issues early in the process, directly before the commission, and that the process itself is vastly streamlined, the old request for legal consideration program is redundant and will be revoked. The next step is the audit division recommendation report, which contains the audit staff's proposed factual findings and incorporates OGC's legal analysis. The commission will vote on audit's proposed findings and adopt a final audit report of the commission. What used to be a 5-report process has been reduced to 2, without any loss in content or procedural rights of the committee. What used to take up to 5 votes of the commission has been reduced to 1. The process will be vastly more efficient, saving the resources of all involved. Following the adoption of a final audit report, the commission will publish the audit file on its website. One big change here is that the commission will publish non-confidential and non-financial documents that form the basis of the commission's finding or legal decision. This is an important change that promotes transparency and the development of precedent by allowing the public to understand the facts underpinning findings and legal determinations made by the commission. Finally, if any findings are referred for enforcement to OGC, the commission may reduce the civil penalty as an incentive to committees that took recommended corrective actions during the audit process. In an effort to smooth the transition, we are delaying the implementation of the new rules until the next election cycle. The intent of the amendments to other documents on the agenda today are to sunset the old rules and make continuing programs consistent with the revised audit procedure. I'm really pleased with how these documents came together and grateful to the entire staff of the FEC for working together so successfully on this important project. Thank you again to everyone who made this happen. That, Commissioner Traynor, pass the floor to you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to thank Chair Lindenbaum and especially Nick Bammon and Ashley Stowe for their work. I would also like to thank the audit staff and Dana Brown, the head of the audit division in particular, for their willingness to guide us through the technical aspects of the audit process. And we would not have been able to do this without input from the Office of General Counsel, who is integral, who's an integral part of the audit process. In 1986, during a press conference, President Ronald Reagan quipped that the 9 most terrifying words in the English language are, "I'm from the government and I'm here to help." In my time here on the commission, I have struggled to understand the current audit procedures and have been frustrated with various aspects of the process. And I had the advantage of being here in the mothership. I can only imagine the confusion, fear, and frustration experienced by those who find themselves going through the process. It is important to remember whom the commission is dealing with when audits are conducted. More often than not, especially in the case of inexperienced candidates and treasurers and state parties, we are dealing with individuals who have volunteered to participate in our political process. Obviously, compliance with the law is important, but donors expect their contributions to go towards a candidate's election or a committee's advertisements, not to pay fancy DC lawyers who are well-versed in the intricacies of the commission's audit process. And nor should they have to. The process should not be a penalty. Therefore, it's incumbent upon the commission to provide a process that protects the right of participants in the political process, does not discourage their future participation in our system of governance, but also promotes compliance and transparency. Before the commission today is a new audit process that strikes the appropriate balance between efficiency, procedural protections for audited committees, orderly development of the law, transparency, and encouraging voluntary compliance with the Federal Election Campaign Act. This new process is the result of extensive public input, both from commenters and a public hearing on the matter, and much back and forth among the staff and my fellow commissioners to reach agreement on how to improve our process. Part of that negotiation is that these new procedures will not go into effect until next cycle. I would have preferred to see these new procedures take effect immediately, but such is the way of things. I intend to work with my colleagues to implement some of these the ideas encompassed in this new procedure into this cycle's audit. I would like to highlight for the American people some of the new procedures that I believe are critical to making this audit process better. First, the public will now know what to expect at every stage of the process, including the scope, legal theories behind each proposed finding, how document disputes will be overseen, and specific deadlines. Second, this new process will be more expeditious with early document disclosure and quick resolution of legal questions. Third, the process promotes transparency with the publication of non-confidential documents related to any findings at the conclusion of the audit and ensures consistency in results across audits raising similar legal issues. Finally, this new process retains the legal question resolution program for questions arising from the report's analysis division while terminating it for audits because committees can now have a meaningful challenge to legal theories that are put forth in the audit process. And I would be remiss if I did not mention that as we work to complement this new process, we welcome feedback from the committees going through the process, as well as the public, about how it is or is not working well. Until now, the audit process has been long, inefficient, and shrouded in secrecy. The commission and committees have expended a great deal of resources to complete audits while often losing activity to the 5-year statute of limitations. The new process established here will expedite audits, provide meaningful and significant legal protections, and hopefully not sour people in the process of exercising their rights to participate in politics. With that, Madam Chair, I would ask for unanimous consent for my comments to be published in the minute.
Colleagues? Yes. Further comments or questions from the colleagues?
Thanks, Madam Chair. Very briefly, I agree with everything that you said and everything that Commissioner Traynor said. I want to thank you both for all the work that went into this process. I'm very excited to support it. I just want to make a note at a broader level that, you know, this is a very big deal. This is a one of a number of very big, important policy accomplishments and bipartisan agreements the commission has reached over the last 6 months, 8 months, and I think it is a sign of a new trend of commission, and I think the hits will keep on coming, and I'm looking forward to that. So I think for those who are commission watchers, it's another feather in our cap, another data point to show that we can get a lot of very important things done working together that no one is perfectly happy with, but at least for or five or six commissioners are happy to support. So thank you very much again for all the work that went into this.
Commissioner Weintraub. Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you to everyone who worked very hard on all of these documents. There's a lot of moving parts and it's all very, it's all kind of complicated. The commission has been saddled with Directive 70 for way too long. I was never a big fan of Directive 70, but that's what it took back in the day to move the audits forward. So that's what we adopted. And I was thrilled when I heard there was interest amongst my colleagues in revisiting the audit procedures, which I think everyone, perhaps especially the staff, found cumbersome and inefficient. And I'm sure the committees did as well. I actually have been pleased over the years to hear how frequently committees compliment the staff, having gone through an audit, which is really not fun for anybody. We frequently will hear from committees that they found working with our audit staff to be a very positive and collaborative effort, and the staff helped them point out ways that they could improve their processes and things they were doing wrong that they need to do right. So I know nobody likes an audit, but that's always been something that I've taken some comfort in, that our staff does such a good job of working with the public and with the committees that do the auditing. The purpose of the audit program is to ensure substantial compliance with the law. The process by which committees get referred from an audit is through our report analysis division and the RFLI process is kind of like a fire alarm. If your alarm is, and I will give credit with Senator Commissioner Broussard, we were talking about this earlier, and we kind of developed this fire alarm analogy together. But, if your fire alarm is beeping, that could mean you just need a new battery. It could mean there's not a lot of problems going on, or it could mean you've got a five-alarm fire, and you got to get out of the house and call the fire department pronto. So when we do the audit, we have to go beyond what the smoke that we see from the RFAI process and see whether there's a fire under it. And for a number of committees, we get clean audit reports at the end of the process. And I think anything we can do to shorten and make less painful the process by which they have to go through that in order to get a clean report at the end is definitely a boon. But for some committees, we find they have other problems that really the smoke was just, to mix my metaphors, the tip of the iceberg. Now we've got a smoky iceberg. I don't know, but climate change does strange things to the environment. So it's really important that we do have a solid audit program that can help us to identify when committees are not in substantial compliance with the law. And I was an early advocate of our including a hearing, and I'm glad that we had that hearing. I thought, I think everybody thought it was extremely helpful. And the commenters were very substantive, and hearings, I think, are always good for a process like this that does involve the public, because they see it from a different angle than we do. But again, it's, and I want to particularly highlight one of the changes that I really like is the reduction in the number of reports. That is really going to be so helpful in making it a more efficient process. My concern all along has been that I want to make sure that in the process, making it streamlining the process, which is necessary, that we don't lose the substance, that we are still doing a good, thorough job of reviewing the finances of these committees. And there was one last minute change in particular that I particularly appreciate. I know it doesn't sound like much, but the addition of footnote 9 saying the list of records that we're going to be requesting is not exhaustive, I think is important. Every committee is different. There are different types of committees that have different kinds of documents. And I think that by including that in the state of the committees, that this is not an exclusive list, so I think it will avoid some fights that we have with the committees over turning over documents. I don't want us to get into a situation where the committee has been, well, it's not on the list, so I don't have to turn it over, and then we have to get into subpoena fights. So I think that will be really helpful in making sure that we can get the documents that we need, which is the only way that we can really do our job properly. There are a bunch of new time limits that are in this document, a bunch of deadlines. I'm a great believer in deadlines. It is a truism, certainly works for me, that if not for the last minute, nothing would ever get done. So you kind of have to have a last minute in order for you have to have those deadlines in order to make sure the work does get done on a timely basis. Are these time limits appropriate and workable? I'm actually not sure about that. I don't know whether anybody sitting here today really knows whether those are exactly the right deadlines to shoot for, and whether they staff will be able to do a thorough job within those time constraints. I think we're going to learn by doing. And I think that the commission made a wise decision in delaying the implementation. What may not be obvious to people who aren't really in the weeds on all this is that we have a shared commitment, and I think this is the only fair way to do it, to having the same set of rules in place for every committee that gets audited within a cycle. And for the authorized committees, you have to start these audits within 6 months of the end of the last cycle. So we were under that time constraint. If we were going to try and adopt new procedures for this cycle, they would have to be put into effect immediately. And we wouldn't give any time for the staff to train themselves on the new procedures. We wouldn't give time to the regulated community to adjust to the new procedures and prepare for them. So it's not that we need an extra 2 years to get ready and delay implementation, but starting it immediately, I think, would have made it a much rockier road. But having made that wise decision to delay implementation, I think we could have taken a little bit more time, particularly to allow for public comment on the actual final procedures.
We did get public input earlier in the process, but we only put the final documents on the public record list. I think it was less than a week, and there were last minute changes. And while I appreciate the last minute changes, I think they were good and constructive last minute changes. Again, it made it hard for anybody on the outside to really dig into the intricacies of all these rules and decide whether they wanted to comment or whether they had something constructive to say on it. And we did get one comment, which I appreciate, from a member of Congress, from Congressman Sarbanes, and he particularly pointed out that his concern about the lack of time for comment, as well as his concern that we ensure that whatever changes we make continue to ensure that committees are meeting the requirements for substantial compliance with the law. So given that we're not really under time constraints for adopting this document, I think it would help us to ensure that everyone in the public has a fair chance to read through this and get their minds around it and figure out whether they want to suggest any improvements or tweaks to it. I think it would benefit us to have a formal public comment period. We have the documents on the website. We put out a box so people could send the comments, but not really a formal comment period. We didn't give them enough time. So I propose that we open a 30-day minimum public comment period, and at the appropriate time, I would be happy to make that motion. I do have one other suggestion that I think would follow on the constructive steps to be more transparent about every aspect of our audit process, and I think we should report to the public. I think that because we are delaying the implementation and because we have to go through a cycle to see how it works, this support would not be due for several years, but I think it would be a good change that is consistent with the rest of the document and with the goals of transparency in the document. If we made a commitment to make a report to the public 6 months after the end of the first cycle, that the first cycle, that these new procedures were in effect, and again at the end of every cycle to see how are we doing on meeting the goals that we set out for ourselves in striking the appropriate balance within the constraints of the act among efficiency, procedural protections for audited committees, orderly development of the law, transparency, and the commission's statutory authority to seek voluntary compliance with the act. And I think we should always be ready to make reports to the public and let them know how we're doing. And again, this is in part inspired by the comment that we got from Congressman Sarbanes, and to show that we are going to continually monitor that we do have an effective program that ensures substantial compliance with the law. And in part, I think it's just keeping with our overall transparency and disclosure mission. So I have a couple of motions and see how they go. At the appropriate time, and again, I just want to thank everybody who worked so hard on these documents.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate my colleagues, all colleagues' comments. First, I do want to thank the Madam Chair and Commissioner Traynor for the work on this. It's not an easy task to be able to tackle something that's been in effect for a significant number of years and has been a challenge for, I believe, having been an attorney here watching it from the moment I think it kind of been in place. But any success that has come out of Directive 70 is a direct effort of the staff. So they are sitting in the audience, at least some of them, the leadership. So we take this opportunity, your names have all been placed out there, but to tell you personally, thank you for the work. I also wanna thank all the staff, the EAs and the staff that helped us get to this point. My staff has been mentioned, but I think there is a particular, let me go back and thank the chair and Commissioner Traynor, because it got down to the last minute and you engaged me and you listened to me and you added that footnote and you have my vote for this today. I think it helps to resolve some of the outward concerns that we've heard from the comment to know that, in fact, that footnote does relieve some of the specific concerns that were addressed. And I think gives staff more comfort that they can proceed with the document they need to be able to do their job accordingly. Because we all know the purpose of an audit is to make sure that there's substantial compliance with the act. So I say thank you for that. At the appropriate time, and there's a motion, I have some discussion points that I would like to make regarding Commissioner Weintraub's, but until we get to that motion. But thank you, colleagues, for your work. Wonderful. Commissioner Broussard? Commissioner Dickerson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Largely echoing my colleagues here, which is a disadvantage of going last. But you know, the commission's audit program is very seldom the bell with the ball around here. But I do think this is a banner day, and I want to take the time accordingly to thank Ashley Stowe and Nick Bannon for their tireless work, the chair and Commissioner Traynor for their leadership and dedication to moving us expeditiously to agreement on a difficult and technical enterprise. You know, this is another success story. I'm echoing the vice chair here. And I think it demonstrates once again that a page has been turned at the commission. Informed observers will now clearly recognize a bipartisan majority of the commission fully committed to reform and to moving beyond deadlock and recrimination to embrace the difficult challenges we were sent here to address. So I see today as part of a collaborative pattern, one that began with Chair Broussard in 2021, and that I hope will continue for many years to come. But even with that framing, these reforms are important on their own merits, and I want to highlight one particular way in which that is true. I started my career as an attorney on internal investigations in New York, which usually involves working side by side with auditors. And in most contexts, and I'm simplifying somewhat, the purpose of an audit is to determine whether an organization is meeting generally accepted standards. And those standards are public. So for instance, in the case of generally accepted accounting principles, guides are produced by both the financial and the governmental accounting standards boards. And auditors are trained to these standards. They're expert in reviewing an organization's books and records to determine whether they comply with this published guidance, as well as any generally accepted rules in a particular industry. And in many ways, the commission's audits are like this. Our auditors are trained professional standards, and they are expert in determining whether conduct meets a particular standard. The difference, though, and you've heard this alluded to a few times when they say that, when my colleagues have noted that the purpose of an audit here is to determine substantial compliance with the Act. The difference from a standard audit is the conduct on which, is the standard against which the audit is conducted. Unlike a generally accepted accounting principle, our auditors are sometimes asked to audit against a standard, say whether a particular communication is express advocacy, on which there may not be universal agreement. Sometimes our audits assert an error has occurred, even though the underlying legal rationale against which they are auditing does not enjoy the support of the majority of the commission. And sometimes the standard, as articulated in a particular case, may enjoy no support on the commission. This is and has been unfair to our auditors and unfair to the committees being audited. Both parties have long deserved to have the commission clearly articulate a legal standard before auditors are asked to apply it. These revisions take a very substantial step towards solving that long-standing problem by creating a framework early in the process for the commission to consider and either resolve or acknowledge a lack of consensus on these issues. But this will allow our auditors to do their work with greater confidence and for those being audited to participate in our process with greater confidence. These changes strike a blow for due process, clarity, transparency, and good order, and I'm grateful for all the work we've got here. And I feel privileged to be a member of the commission at a time when that work could bear fruit. Thanks again.
Yeah, I think with that, we've all spoken. And that means we are ready for motions. So I guess Commissioner Broussard? No, not Commissioner Broussard. I'm sorry, Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that the commission open a 30-day formal public comment period regarding new document 23-10-B1.
Any discussion of the motion?
Madam Chair. I'm not going to join the motion. Repeat what you said. You know, there's no legal requirement for notice and comment generally, and I think that you and Commissioner Traynor went well above and beyond the requirements of the law. And frankly, I think the reaction from the regulated community was pretty substantial and loud and clear. These are processes that are entrusted to us in our discretion by Congress and our expertise. I am unmoved by general concerns that, despite months of comment period, a hearing and the expert views of most practitioners in this area, that we are insufficiently informed before.
And I'll add one comment on that as well, that we did have robust comments when we were when we first started that this off, and we initially put the notice out. We received comments pretty much immediately, and that's usually what happens when we put anything out, be it an advisory opinion or something like this. Here, these processes have been out for a week. We worked very hard to get them in so that they could be posted online for the public to see. And the only comment we received was received last night or this morning. We didn't receive any comments from many in the public that often comment on what we do. I take that as meaning that there is no reason for more of a comment period. I think that we have worked very hard, and there is a point where it's time, and we've reached that time. And I'm very much looking forward to voting here. And to working with the staff as we put this in place. So that said, all in favor?
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
The motion fails 2-4 with Commissioners Weintraub and Broussard in favor, and the Vice Chair, Commissioner Traynor Dickerson, and myself opposed. Commissioner Weintraub, further motion?
Yes, please. Thank you, Madam Chair. I consistent with what I said earlier, and remember the part that I forgot when I was talking, and that is that I am cognizant of our long experience with Directive 70, which I think outlived its usefulness, and there was no mechanism for release. It had just hung on way too long, and that is the other reason why I think it would be good for us to discipline ourselves with a process of formal review on a regular basis. So I move to amend meeting document 23-10-D1 to add a new section 5, minimum 5, headed commission report to the public. And it would say, within 6 months following the conclusion of the 23-24 cycle audits, and within 6 months following the conclusion of any subsequent election cycle audits, the commission will report to the public on how the new procedures are achieving the goals set forth in the final paragraph of the introduction to the explanation of these procedures, quote, strike the appropriate balance within the constraints of the Act among efficiency, procedural protections for audited committees, orderly development of the law, transparency, and the commission's statutory authority to seek voluntary compliance with the Act.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am open to discussion on this one because I do see that there is the potential of value for us to do our own kind of internal audit of this audit process. But while I support the motion, I would like for us to talk about and maybe flesh out exactly how we could do this. I'm not conceptualized how we intend to do this, because I do have a concern that we're going to have staff in the midst of implementing a program and then throw this in. I'm kind of wondering, would this be better served as a part of our quarterly reports process that we do receive, and the public is aware we have quarterly reports, to consider looking at this in the compliance division? At least at the initial onset of the program for maybe the first 6 months, as you suggested. So I'd like to get it out there. I know that we're getting this today and everything, and it puts us all in a sense of discomfort. I join that. But I think that one of the responsibilities that we have for doing something that has the real potential to benefit this audit division is to all agree that there's something to look at. Are we doing it right, and can we approve upon it? So I'd like to keep it open for discussion. I know that it's tied to the actual document, there is a possibility of considering removing it and maybe putting it on another agenda and adding it. Just so I'm not sure how the appropriate way to handle this, which is why I'm asking the five of you. Thank you.
Well, I'll go with my comments is that I think accountability for the agency is always a good thing. But I have just received this in the last hour or two. And I'm not willing to put additional burdens or reporting burdens on our staff until I actually talk to them and understand it and flesh out how it is that we make these determinations of when we need these benchmarks. So while I am absolutely open to this and figuring out, I don't think there's a need to put it into the directive of what we're voting on today. I actually don't think it would be appropriate to put it into it either way, but I would absolutely be open in this discussion. The quarterly reports is a fantastic idea as per usual. And to see how we can do this to make sure that we are finding out what is working for our agency and what isn't.
Thank you. You hit most of my points, Madam Chair. I received this less than a half hour before this meeting was to begin and had no advance notice that it was coming. I'm happy to talk about this at a future agenda. Any commissioner can put what they like on an open meeting agenda, and I'm always happy to discuss it. But this project has been ongoing for months, and I don't think a last minute question like this, which can be dealt with later, should hold up the process.
Mr. Vice Chair.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I agree with everything Commissioner Dickerson just said. I also have some concerns Commissioner Broussard raised about the who, what, where, why of what will be included in this report, which I don't think is really fleshed out in this motion. The additional point I'll raise is that the period 6 months following the conclusion of the 23 to 24 cycle audits could reach into the year 2030. 5-year statute of limitations, audits that, you know, aren't going to begin until 2025. I don't think the current set of six commissioners here will be here in 2030. Seems unlikely to me. I think the commission of 2030 can decide what reports it wants to get. And so for that reason, I'm not in a position to try to bind what reports that future commission wants. And so I'm not going to be able to support this today.
Mr. Minecraft.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We are adopting a document that's going to fund future commissioners. That is actually the point of what we're doing today. So, in terms of my colleague's suggestion about the quarterly reports, I think it would be an excellent addition to the quarterly reports. But what I would like to pursue, and if it doesn't pass today, then I'm happy to work with my colleagues and see if there's another way of doing it, is a report to the public. Quarterly reports come to us as commissioners, but I think the public also deserves to know how we're doing. I acknowledge that it came around at the last minute, didn't occur to me until this morning after I read the comment from Commissioner from Congressman Sarbanes, not being given the notion. And I was trying to think of ways that we could ensure that the program continues to meet its goals and that we are, again, as I said, transparent. But I still support the idea. And if we are still doing audits in 2030 for the 23-24 cycle, I think that in and of itself will say that we are missing some of the goals of this new procedure, which is to make it all more efficient and run faster and better. So that might be a data point that would speak for itself.
Okay, I believe we are ready to vote. So all in favor?
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
Motion fails 2-4 with Commissioners Broussard and Weintraub in favor, and the Vice Chair Commissioners Trainer Dickerson and myself opposed. Moving on to more motions. Commissioner Trainer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move that the Commission approve agenda document number 23-10-B1, which is the revised audit process for committees that do not receive public funds.
Any discussion on the motion? Commissioner Mike.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will support the motion. I think the procedures hopefully will be a big improvement over Directive 70, and I think they deserve a chance. And I hope that we can work together in the future to continue to ensure that we have that kind of accountability that they are improving.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Commissioner Tanya.
I move the commission approve agenda document number 23-10-C, which is the report analysis division legal questions resolution program.
Any discussion of the motion? All those in favor, Commissioner Weintraub.
Just a question. I understand why we're taking, why we're doing this and why the committees that are subject to the new procedures don't need these procedures as well. But there are other committees. One, still do get some committees that receive public funds that are not going to be subject to these new procedures. And I'm wondering why they don't get to continue to seek this kind of legal guidance.
So committees who accept public funds have the right to raise legal challenges codified in the regulations. So section 9038.1c2 provides the candidate and his or her authorized committee can submit in writing within 60 calendar days after receipt of the preliminary audit report legal and factual materials disputing or commenting on the proposed findings contained in the preliminary audit report. And part of this problem here is we're talking about so many different reports, it's hard to tell what is what. The committee can also or may also submit additional documentation requested by the commission. And the materials can be submitted by council if they desire. It requires the commission to consider legal challenges before voting. So before voting on whether to issue and approve an audit report, the commission will consider any written legal and factual material timely submitted by the candidate or his or her authorized committee in accordance with paragraph C of this section. And the part is the first filed audit report and that the legal challenge occurs early in the process. So it's not the case that committees who receive public funds are losing the opportunity to resolve legal questions. It is already there in the law. Okay. Move to vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? So the motion passes 5-0 with Commissioner Broussard abstaining. Commissioner Turner.
I'd move that the commission approve agenda document number 2310-D. Which is the revised Directive 69.
Any discussion of the motion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously.
And then finally, Madam Chair, I would move the commission approve agenda document number 23-10-D.
Any discussion of the motion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes unanimously. Thank you all. This was quite the process. I feel pretty done.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right, moving on. We have, we're gonna, I believe we're gonna go to the advisory opinion that we have on here. I'm sorry, I'm a little discombobulated. And we have a requester. I'm sorry that my screen is out, so I'm a little. And we have the requester and counsel. One moment. Okay. So we have up here is the draft advisory opinion 2023-03. In response to the advisory opinion request from the Colorado Republican State Central Committee and its chairman, David Williams. On their behalf, we have Christopher Murray. On behalf of the Commission's Office of General Counsel, Lindsay Bird will be presenting. Ms. Bird, welcome. And the floor is yours when you're ready.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And good afternoon, Commissioners. Agenda document 2309A is a draft response to an advisory opinion request from the Colorado Republican State Central Committee and its chair, David Williams. The Colorado Republican State Central Committee, which is a state party committee, asks whether funds received and spent by its legal fund established to challenge a state law that created a semi-open primary system, would be contributions and expenditures under the Act, and whether disbursements from the fund would be federal election activity or activity conducted in connection with the federal election. The draft concludes that the funds received and spent solely to litigate the constitutionality of the state law would not be contributions and expenditures under the Act because they would not be received and spent for the purpose of influencing any election for federal office. The draft further concludes that the proposed legal fund would not be engaged in federal election activity or otherwise engaged in activity in connection with the federal election. The commission received no comments on the request and one comment on the draft from the Campaign Legal Center. Thank you, and we are available to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Council. Colleagues, any discussion of the motion? Commissioner Broussard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We did receive a comment, but prior to the comment, I sent around a draft that removed footnote 22, which is exactly what is in the comment that we received. And we didn't have any discussion or anything in regards to that at the appropriate time. I will be making a motion, which I think my office sent to everyone to let you know, that I'd be making a motion to remove the language in footnote 22 after the id. But I think the comment kind of sums up my concerns with this. It becomes hypothetical when we're not exactly opining to the requester on what exactly what facts are we considering. It's conditional. You know, we're giving them an option to say, if you don't like A, pick B. And that's not what the purpose of an AO is. It's nice that someone agreed with me outside, but I was right already. So thank you for that. And then at the appropriate time, I'll make a motion. But I would be interested if colleagues want to engage on this. Do you see it different? This is how I read the regulation.
Madam Chair. I would, and I appreciate the invitation. I see this as part of the request. You know, the requester explicitly noted these protections. They built it into the process. It was an intentional decision. So within the four corners of the question that's being asked to us, I find it odd that we wouldn't recognize that it's part of the question being asked to us and just be silent on a material aspect of the AO itself, of the request itself. I also don't see it as contingent, really, because what we're saying is we acknowledge that you sent this to us, but it wasn't material to our determinations. I'd rather the clarity of explaining exactly what we did and did not rely on, rather than have a situation down the road and look, old litigator talking, right? Where you pull the record and you've got the request and we're silent on this part of the request. We have no idea what the commission was thinking at the time. There's no ambiguity in the scope of the advisory opinion. And I think the short footnote with respect to my friends on the outside who commented actually strengthens the conclusion and makes the connection between the request and the AO much less ambiguous than it otherwise would be. At least that's how I've been thinking of it.
I mean, I'm sure. So would not the option have been to reach out to the requester to clarify the questions with them then so that we could see if we are directly answering what they're seeking? It seems to me in that instance, maybe the change should have happened at the point that we got this in.
I'm sure. I think that's a perfectly reasonable path to have taken. I guess I think of it as, you know, if you were to have an as-applied challenge in court, right? You come in and you say, I think this course of conduct is constitutionally protected and efforts to prohibit it are wrong. Well, yeah, in your complaint, you can list out all the little dot and tittle of like what's going on in terms of, I think I actually got that one wrong. Sorry, I'm a little sleep deprived. All the little things that may make out your claim, but what you're really saying is the facts in this course of conduct, I think, are legally protected. And I think that's pretty much what happens in an advisory opinion, from my view, which is that you follow the request, you say what the facts are of the situation, and then we opine on whether those facts are or not, you know, a violation of the Act. And so I take the point that you may or may not have facts in the record that are material, but I don't see the harm in recognizing which ones were or were not material or charter decision. And I'm not sure we need to force counsel to clarify what they think the material facts are, because presumably in sending the request, they thought all of this as a package was the universe that they needed the advice on.
Madam Chair,
I think we have the requester with us. So I'd like, if you would, I'd just like to hear from you with regard to this proposed answer to the AO and anything that you think we may have missed and didn't address, or things that are overly addressed that cause problems.
Thank you, Commissioner Traynor, and Chris Murray with Brownstein, Hyatt, Farber, Schreck on behalf of the Colorado Republican Committee, the requester here. I appreciate the chance to be with you, and I'd also be remiss if I didn't say, as somebody who represents entities who are occasionally subject to audit, very pleased to see the new audit regulations adopted today. I'll just say, I don't think it'll be any surprise to you, Commissioner Traynor, or to any of your colleagues, that we like the draft AO. When it comes to footnote 22, just to address that directly, from our point of view, we could take it or leave it. We will have an independent board governing this. And the reason for that will simply be to insulate the leadership of the state party from having to make day-to-day decisions on this. It's something that we want, whether it's necessary to the conclusion in the AO or not, right? So I happen to agree with what footnote 22 says after the id. I think the Campaign Legal Center has it wrong in their comment. But if it comes out, that doesn't create problems for us at all. As to the rest of the opinion, no, we think we have exactly what we need in order to be able to go forward. And we think, as the AO lays out, it is consistent with past AOs in kind of similar circumstances.
So counsel is telling me that you think I'm wrong too, right? Just don't worry, you don't have to answer, just joking. For me, I take great comfort in the fact that they said that they are having this independent board, which also goes into my decision-making and deciding to support this advisory opinion. So I'm quite happy to know that regardless of how we vote on this, you will still have it. So thank you very much for that, even though you told me that I'm wrong and it's okay. But I will be making that motion at the appropriate time, Madam Chair.
Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I think you're right, Commissioner Broussard. I have always thought that you were right. And if you had not circulated a proposal to delete footnote 22, I would have done it. Beat me to the punch. In addition to thinking that you're right on the law, I also, by longstanding practice, I think we should take the request that we get. Somebody says, I'm going to set up my operation with this, this, and this kind of provisions to it. That's what we opine on. And if somebody else wants to come in and ask a different question, it's like, well, I want to do two out of three of those things. So that's still okay. Well, that's a different request. This isn't a rulemaking, it's an advisory opinion. It's based on a specific transaction. He told us he's gonna have an independent governing board, and that may be important to some people and not important to others, but that's, you know, I'm perfectly happy to approve the transaction that was in fact proposed. I'm prepared to support the Commissioner's Advisory Commission.
All right. Any further discussion? Otherwise, motions. Okay. Sure. All right.
Uh-huh. Thank you, Madam Chair. In advisory opinion 2023-03, Colorado Republican State Central Committee, and the approval of agenda document number 2309A, subject to revising footnote 22 by deleting the sentence that follows.
Any discussion of the motion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Motion passes unanimously. Two for two today. Thank you so much.
I just wanted colleagues to know, I hope you know I was kidding. I definitely didn't take any offense by agreeing. So thank you very much, sir.
All right. Final item on the agenda is the Audit Division Recommendation Memorandum on Latinos for America First.
Madam Chair.
Oh, Mr. Smith. And we have, there we go. All right. Floor is yours when you're ready.
Okay, thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Lindenbaum and commissioners. Before you is the Audit Division Recommendation Memorandum on Latinos for America First, which provides the audit staff's recommendations for the following findings. Finding one, misstatement of financial activity. Finding two, increased activity. And finding three, disclosure of occupation and or name of employer. We are available to answer any questions. Thank you.
Colleagues, any discussion?
Colleagues, any motions? Okay. Mr. Wendt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. With respect to the Audit Division Recommendation Memorandum on Latinos for America First, A21-12, agenda document 23-04-8, I move approval of the Audit Division's recommendations.
Any discussion on the motion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
No.
Motion fails 3-3 with Commissioners Weintraub, Broussard, and myself in favor, and the Vice Chair, Commissioner Traynor, and Dickerson opposed for the motion. Mr. Vice Chair.
Thanks, Madam Chair. With respect to Audit Division Recommendation Memorandum on Latinos for America First, A21-12, I move approval subject to the following. One, in the Audit Division Recommendation Memorandum, reduce the amount in violation and finding three, disclosure of occupation and or name of employer to 129 contributions from individuals totaling $39,340. And make any corresponding technical and conforming changes to the forthcoming proposed final audit report. And two, remove from finding one, misstatement of financial activity in the forthcoming proposed final audit report, language that, quote, LFAF provided no specific explanation for why the $76,172 in contributions from individuals were not reported, end quote. And in its place, insert the committee's contention that the errors were unintentional and due to the volunteer treasurer's lack of experience.
Any discussion on the motion? Commissioner Broussard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I should have asked. I thought it was going to be done a little differently. There is a portion of this that I can support, but I'm not able to support the portion in regards to the disclosure of occupation. I'm just looking at my own notes, is that I probably should have made a motion to set forth. I am comfortable with approving, is it finding number three? And my apologies to the Vice Chair, would you be willing to recall that and split it for me?
Sure, Madam Chair. So let me withdraw that. I guess if I can do this in, I guess I can split this up in two motions. I just don't want to approve the document twice with two changes. So let me do it this way. With respect to the Audit Division Recommendation Memorandum on Latinos for America First, A21-12. I'll do the occupation one first. I move that in the ADRM that the commission reduce the amount in violation in finding three, disclosure of occupation and or name of employer to 129 contributions from individuals totaling $39,340 and make any corresponding technical and conforming changes in the forthcoming proposed final audit report.
Any discussion on the motion? None. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Same. And mine was an aye.
Okay. So the motion passes 5-0 with the Vice Chair, Commissioner Traynor Dickerson, Weintraub, and myself in favor, and Commissioner Broussard abstaining. Commissioner Weintraub.
Just a point of clarification. I supported the full finding as recommended by the Audit Division, but rather than have it disappear altogether, I'm willing to take a finding on 129 contributions that we can agree on, even if we can't get the 130.
Madam Chair, and then let me make the second part then. With respect to Latinos for America First, A21-12, I move to approve the ADRM subject to removing from finding one the statement of financial activity in the forthcoming proposed final audit report, language that, quote, LFAF provided no specific explanation as to why $76,172 in contributions from individuals were not reported, end quote, and in its place, insert the committee's contention that the errors were unintentional and due to the volunteer treasurer's lack of experience.
Any second motion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. So I'll say 3-4, 3-5. Wonderful. Thank you. And with that, The staff director is not here, so in his place. Are there any management or administrative matters that need to be discussed?
Madam Chair, there are no such matters.
Thank you all. Well, that concludes the open meeting for today. Thank you.
Thank you.